Hello, my name is Walter Latham, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast. I am your host, along with Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Unfortunately, Michelle will not be able to join us today. There was some personal problems that she has to address, but she has to address those, and she will not be here, and I miss her. All right, so I, Walter Latham, will try to do my best without Michelle today. But we do have Chris Sweeney that will be supporting me. Greg Coleman will be the moderator in the chat box. So if you have any questions, just put them in the chat, and Greg will try to get an answer for you. Okay, and from our guests. I do want to give a dedication out to, and I had a passing in my family, my brother, my first cousin. I want to dedicate the show to Ronnie Clinton Stokes of Williamson, North Carolina, who passed this past Wednesday, May 5th. Love you, big bro. Without you, I know I wouldn't be where I'm at. All right, and as I indicated, Michelle had a death in her family, so my condolences to Michelle, Chris, and all the family. It was a bit of a tough week for us.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, if you visit our website, which 2.0 is coming soon. It's at www.thewalkweekly.com. All right, people visit our website, and you look at our mission statement and our past guests that we have had on this show, and you will see that leadership and wealth is heavily weighted in whatever we deliver to our listeners. That's part of our value add, all right, that we try to stick to. So the name of today's show is Corporate Leadership and Entrepreneurship. And we're doing an interview with a person that has tremendous expertise in that space. So what constitutes a great leader? Are they taught? Are they born? What are the lessons learned that can be used to accelerate growth, both in the private and public sector and entrepreneurship? Today, we will put on our business hats, okay, with our very, very special guest that has decided to grace her with her appearance, all right, and she's a connection of Chris Sweeney, and I just want to thank her, which I will get into her introduction momentarily. Candia Johnson. All right, she is a corporate speaker. She's spoken at some of the largest companies in the world. All right, so finding her sweet spot for amplifying the voices of the workplace and entrepreneurial leaders of color, Candia launched Candid Conversations, a podcast. She has a podcast also, and she deserves more. A leadership training, coaching, and mentoring program for business owners, managers, and executives. Candia has interviewed hundreds of entrepreneurs, executives, change makers, and published articles about business and life for publications as such as Black Enterprise Magazine, Diversity for Women, AARP, Sisters, and more. Beyond that, she's been featured in Forbes, Business Insider, and Candia has delivered presentations on stages throughout the United States and Africa. To date, influential brands such as South by Southwest, Harvard University Business School, the James Beard Foundation, and African Women in Technology have invited her to speak at their events. Candia holds a degree, a bachelor's from Delaware State University in public relations, and earned an Master of Science of Education from Old Dominion University. With that said, I want to welcome Candia to our podcast, and I am going to have some special effects.
Round of applause for that introduction. Yes.
Yeah, Candia.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Candia, for taking the time. Amen. Being with us today. But before we go any further, I just want to credit our sponsors, Beauty Blends by Ami. All right, their IG is at beauty_blends_by_AMI on me. Also, Soap and Love. All right, and their IG is Soap and Love CO. And their Facebook handle is Soap and Love CO. And also, MS Hair Private Studio. And that is a handmade, all natural and organic hair oil. And the IG for Michelle Sweeney Hair is IG at Facebook at Michelle Sweeney Hair. Now, we also have our panel members before we get to our guests. And we have Greg Coleman out of North Carolina. He's an engineer at DeWalt Weekly. We have Sergeant Ernest J. Robinson, combat veteran out of Washington, D.C. We have Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, senior consultant and a panelist at DeWalt Weekly and a chef. We also would normally have, and he still may call in, Gene Edwards, Mill District Leader, Democrat out of the Bronx, 79th District. And with that said, and we're going to go back and let's talk to our guests. You have tremendous accomplishment, Candia. So my first question to you is, how you doing today? How are things going? And what's happening? What has happened in the past, the present, and what's going to go on in the future?
Oh, wow. Okay. I would say for right now, I am definitely feeling good. I feel like I am blessed by the best simply because I'm breathing right now and I'm on the phone with you wonderful people.
All right. Thank you.
In terms of where I've been, wow, that is a loaded question.
Okay. Well, I do want you to, I do want you to, you know, do that, which, what we call it, Swiss cheese it. You know, you want to treat the whole thing. We go Swiss cheese it.
Okay, so that's fine. So I always tell people this. I spent about 15 years climbing the corporate ladder of success, only to realize my ladder was placed on the wrong building. Okay. I felt incredibly unfulfilled. I was working as a corporate communication and learning consultant. And so when someone wanted to get the word out about a new product, service, or initiative, big companies such as pharmaceutical companies, the US Navy, I had a contract with them. They would hire me to help them get the word out, craft messages to their employees or even to their clients and customers about this new product or service or initiative. Sometimes it was a marketing campaign. Sometimes it was a training. And so I did that for many years, but the travel wore me down. I was traveling in the airport like crazy. And so my clients were located across the United States. I even had a gig where I was traveling week to week back and forth from Canada. And that lifestyle, on top of trying to fit in into corporate, I didn't really see anyone who looked like me at the upper levels of leadership. And it just wasn't fulfilling to me. And so I did that until about 2012. And I remember I was on a mother-daughter trip to, we were in South Africa. My sister was on a call right now. We were there. And I decided at that moment, you know what? This is it. When I return to the United States, I'm going to give my notice. And my plan was to leave corporate and just to do some independent contracts. And it evolved, not overnight, but I had a few harsh lessons and it evolved into me stepping into the space where I am coaching people on how to become leaders and get recognized as leaders in their field. And now I'm back into the corporate space, but on my own terms, where I do a lot of workshops on helping leaders step into that next best version of themselves and also, you know, be of service, be of better service to their people.
Okay. Okay. In terms of, you know, leadership has a very wide scope, right? So I'm going to try to drill it down a little bit more granular. What do you think? Do you think a leader is born or do you think that they are created, made, molded?
I believe leaders can be molded. I believe the mistake that we make is thinking that leaders are born, right? I feel like most times in the corporate sector, what I've found is most leaders are put into a position of leadership, but they're not ready to lead. They're put into that position simply because they have maybe mastered the expertise, right? Or mastered a certain level of expertise or a process. But leadership is essentially not about your position or rank. It's about your willingness to serve. That's what leadership is. And so people have to learn, as you said, the different components of leadership. There's coaching, there's being an effective communicator, there's practicing empathy, there's being a good listener, an active and empathetic listener. So leaders, for me, are molded. I don't really believe that many of us aren't born to lead. You have to be molded and trained and educated, and you know, you also have to unlearn. Let me say this. It also comes down to your willingness to unlearn.
Okay. Yeah, you got to be able to pivot. I agree with you. Having, 30 years in Wall Street and technology, similar to you, traveling, but I traveled Asia. I've been on the five continents working. Uh-huh. All right, uh-huh. All five. Only two I didn't get were with Antarctica and Australia. Other than that, I worked all over the world, and I can sympathize with you with and you going through it. I've been through it. Is that, 1 week, before I retired, I was 1 week in Mexico City, 1 week New York, 1 week Mexico, 1 week. So every other week, I had to fly out every Sunday to go to Mexico City and Asia. But I learned a lot, I learned a lot, especially in Japan, which I fell in love with Tokyo, and I learned elementary Japanese because I was there for, for a few years, Singapore. So but then again, you got the upside of that travel too, don't you? All right.
Well, in the beginning, you get your travel points, but
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You get the hotel points. You get the the frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, but after a while, listen, you're in a hotel room by yourself. You're trying to figure it out, right? There's no family, no friends there. So after a while, for me, it gets really old. Right. And I'm single at the time. So I remember at that time I had a joke, like, you want to date me, meet me at the airport, because that's where I spend the most of my time. So that lifestyle, I felt like I was more committed to the development of somebody else's business than my own business. So for me, it just got the whole living out of your car, living in the airport. I was tired of that a few years in.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be tiring, but we always called it, referred to it as being a road warrior. Until you experience it, you want to be a road warrior, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going
to
turn it over to some of the guys. We have a speaker, someone similar to you, is on the panel, Ernest Robbins. He's also a public speaker. So, okay. Ernest, I'm going to go to you first. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I think that when the audience knows me, we'll definitely want to know more about Candia. So, Candia, where'd you grow up at, and what kind of shaped you into the woman and leader that you are today?
Oh, I love that question. So I always say Brooklyn, New York raised me. Shout out to my Brooklyn Knights on the phone or on the podcast. But Brooklyn, New York raised me, but the world has truly been my playground and helping me step into the many different versions of myself. And so in addition to traveling for work, I would say globally, I traveled solo by myself. My first trip solo was to Italy. And I would say that trip, I want to say maybe it was 2008, 2009, but that trip really helped me develop a whole new or discover a whole new part of myself. I developed a lot of confidence because, of course, you're navigating. I took the train up from Venice to Florence to Rome, and I developed. I think that's where I started to learn how to trust myself, right? Because even in leadership, you have to learn how to trust yourself and trust your decisions. And so I would say that solo trip really helped me set the foundation in developing trust in myself. And then after that, I took another solo trip to South Africa. I met up with a tour group there, and I just began to really start to develop trust in myself. But then I also began to discover that I just wanted another, my identity. I didn't want my identity attached to my job or attached to my title. And so I just began to get really, really curious about the world around me and what I really enjoyed. And I also realized through some of those trips and even just making the decision to finally, you know, cut the ties from my corporate job at the time, I also finally decided that, you know, I had been my parents by all means, while they had the best my best interests at heart and telling me, you know, get a good job, good benefits, go to school. For me, I thought that that meant happiness. And later on, I realized that it was two separate things. And so those, you know, traveling and meeting different people and really taking the time to tap into my own curiosity helped me to be here with you today.
Well, I'm sure that the you being here with the audience, we're definitely thankful and grateful. But I'm sure there's a lot of women and your clients that you're able to serve. So tell us a little bit about who you serve and how you serve them, and how your experience has helped do that for you.
Okay, so most of my clients are mid-career women. Right. I would say at or about our 30s, we start to, I've worked with a few men too, but we start to get the itch like, okay, wait a minute. I have all of these things and I'm still unfulfilled and I'm still unhappy. Mm-hmm. And so they have this itch to start a consulting business, or they want to become a speaker, or they want to, you know, position themselves for another role at work. And so my role is to help them beat the self-doubt and confidently communicate the value that they bring to the table so they can get hired or recognized as leaders within their industry. I typically do that through coaching and workshops where I teach them how to use content, pitch themselves for media attention to get recognized as leaders, or pitch themselves for speaking engagements to get recognized as leaders. So right now in my group programs, I have women who are managers, but they also have consulting businesses, or they're directors. My client Sarah is a director of HR. She also has a very successful consulting business on the side where she is passionate about diversity, inclusion, and pay equity. And so in addition to helping her develop the leadership presence, I also help her pitch herself and position herself in media and speaking engagements. And she's done some wonderful things, particularly during a pandemic. She's been in CNN, Fast Company. She's landed several speaking engagements. And so those are some of the results that clients get from working with me, in addition to the mindset work that I also do with them.
So sounds like you guys do a lot with preparing individuals for rejection. So can you talk a little bit about how you go into the mindset of those preparing for the no's and the rejection?
Well, one of the things, I'm a firm believer in the experimental mindset. Mm-hmm. And that means that every single thing that you put out into the world is an experiment. It's an opportunity to get feedback. Feedback is fuel for your level up. Failure is fuel for your level up. And if you're not getting rejected, that simply means you're not trying hard enough to get rejected. It's just simply part of the process. You cannot get to that next level of success without it. And rejection, I always look at it like this. Rejection, you know, sometimes people say rejection is redirection. No, I just think rejection is part of the process. So even if you consider the sales process, when you are trying to sell yourself, statistically, industry standard says that, you know, we usually have a 2% conversion rate, right? So if you look at the number of people on your email list, when you're selling to those people, you have somewhat, depending on the industry, but usually the industry standard is a 2% conversion rate. So you have to get comfortable with saying, who's going to reject me today so I can get my 2% conversion, right? It is essentially part of the process, right? And so when someone's telling me, you know, they're struggling with getting people in, and I said, well, how many no's have you got? And it was a hard lesson for me as well to embrace the no's, and not only to embrace the no's, but when you get an opportunity to also ask for feedback, right? Why was I rejected, or what, you know, about my program did you feel you weren't most interested in? So just taking them through that process, even sharing my own experiences and being rejected. I always share the experience about my first client. My very first client as an entrepreneur was a person who rejected me for a job a year before. So didn't take it personal. I kept following him on LinkedIn and I would like his posts and comment. And I remember I went for an interview with his company for a director of communication. And they took me through a series of like 5 interviews. It was about 5 hours with about 10 different people. And I'm like, y'all could have at least fed your girl. But they took me through this long process and they still didn't hire me. And he said to me, Candia, this was a difficult decision, but I'm going to keep you in mind. And about a year later, he contacted me and he said, are you open to consulting? I have this big pharmaceutical company and I can't possibly take them on. And so that's what really started my process into entrepreneurship. So I always explain to people that rejection is simply not redirection. It's just part of the process. I don't believe you go through three things. I believe you grow through them. And rejection is one of those things that you can grow through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll just ask one more question.
Sure.
So since, you talk about, things not being redirection, how has your business been impacted through COVID? How were you able to embrace that? And also how you're coaching others to do the same.
Right. So COVID has been very, very interesting. So my business definitely took a hit, particularly with my corporate clients, because I had several workshops on the books at that time. Do a lot of in-person workshops. And so like everyone else in the world, everything just stopped for a second. And a few clients, I felt like even ghosted me, right? So we were having conversations and emails and firming some things up. Man. And then everything just was silent.
Just stopped.
It just stopped, okay? And so, budgets dried up, or at least people put a pause on the budget. But the crazy thing was, at that same time, I was launching my coaching program, Stories That Sell. And I thought like 50 gazillion times, you know what, Candia, you should just cancel it. And no one is going to pay you for this. And this was right before they shut the world down and we were under quarantine and all those sorts of things. And I'm so glad and so happy that I followed my mind, because people still signed up. I still had a group of 7 women who signed up for my program. And the program was initially supposed to be 8 weeks. And these ladies stayed with me for 8 months at the 8-month program. Wow. And so I learned a lot from them. Yes, it was a small group, but I was able to refine some of the materials and refine some of the process that I had laid out to take them through. And it was a tough lesson. Now, I don't want to say a tough lesson. It was a good lesson for me, because I had 8 weeks in mind. And at the end of 8 weeks, they're like, girl, you got to figure out something, because we're not going anywhere. And so I flipped it into an entire 8-month program. So the number one thing I would say is, people always talk about confidence, and confidence is key, right? That's part of my business model and teaching you confidence. But I think, again, being open to curiosity and being open to discovering a new way and a new way of doing and thinking and believing. And I feel like this pandemic, for every industry, for every business, this was an opportunity for you to reshape and redefine how you go about your interactions with people. Even if we look at our school systems, right? It was an opportunity for you to tweak the curriculum, right? And refine the curriculum. And so now I'm busy again, thank God, with my corporate clients. But one of the things that I've learned from the pandemic is you can't have people sit on a computer for 6 to 8 hours. And so now at most, I do talks and workshops, and they're about, especially for the workshops, maybe 60 to 90 to 120 minutes max. I've pushed back on several clients who expect for me to do a 6-hour online thing. I will not do that, because it's unrealistic to believe that people are going to sit there and be engaged for 8 hours or 6 hours looking at you on a Zoom call. That's not happening. Not for me, it is.
Right. So one reason I had asked you those questions, I wanted to highlight, you know, because again, you talk a lot about mindset, and you could have made a mistake, but you oftentimes you talk about living, if you live your life with the lessons versus the mistakes, and you embodied your own words and exemplifying that by taking the lesson of COVID, pushing forward, was able to reach and impact, that small cohort of women, but it's going to transform to so much more. And so I applaud you for, you know, enduring it, sticking it out. And I can't wait to hear some more from you. This is the Walt Weekly Show, not Ernest Robinson. I want to give it back over to the host.
No, Ernest, that's fantastic, man. I like the questions, how you pose them, and how Candia responded. A lot of it covered, some of the questions that I have. Thank you for that, Ernest. You know, you already asked the questions, a lot of questions that I wanted to. So thank you.
No problem.
You're a good man.
Hey, Walter, this is Greg.
Yes.
I have a question from one of our very own entrepreneurs, Michelle. Her question is, there are more Black-owned businesses that are launched, including hers, during COVID. Are you getting more clients because of that?
No. Now, I'm busy with clients, but I'm not getting more clients because of COVID. And here's why. Oftentimes, people see selling themselves or being able to sell their product or sell the value of their product. They see that as a last step. Right. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes what I've found with many entrepreneurs is we're in a rush to get the product out, but we don't understand that you could have the best ideas or the best product or service in the world. But if you don't know how to sell on the value of that product, if you don't know how to communicate the value of that product, then no one will be able to hear you. And so I would say usually it's the seasoned entrepreneurs, usually people in the first to 2 years of business are focused on the product and the bells and whistles, the website and that sort of thing. And then probably about the end of the two-year mark, they said, listen, something is wrong with my messaging. What can you do to help me? So I will say that it will definitely come, right? I definitely expect it to come. But in the very early stages, I would say in the first year, usually people are more focused on the mechanics, the website, the touch, you know, the bells and whistles of it all versus how to sell it, how to communicate the value of it. They do, I will say, they most often too are focused on getting PR, right? Media attention and things of that sort. But again, that's also contingent on the value, being able to sell on the value of your service or your product. And it was one of the top mistakes I would say when I was writing for Black Enterprise and I was interviewing entrepreneurs and change makers about their product or service, they would pitch me and, you know, you should be able to sell your product or service, I would say, in 30 seconds or less. If you're writing a pitch, I should be able to get your story angle within the first 5 sentences. And so typically it's not until after people realize they're not getting the hit or they're not getting the response that they understand that they need someone who can help them sell on the value of their product or service or the value of their thought leadership, I should say, because there are a lot of speakers who follow that same path. So, Greg, you said it's about having a delicate balance between the product and what was the last part that you said?
Exactly what the delicate balance is between having a strong product and being able to package and market yourself to the public. I mean, is
right.
I guess each one would be on a case by case basis. But did you see that's part of your level of expertise, being able to create the balance between the two?
Yes. See, here's the thing, too, especially when you are looking at a product or service. Right. What's value for me and what's value to me is what's value for you is going to be different. And so a lot of us, if you are selling a product or service, you have to also be able to flip the value of that product or service to meet the needs of the person you are trying to sell to, right? So that's one thing. The second part of that too, especially for new entrepreneurs, listen to your target audience. Listening to your target audience, whether it's asking for their advice in a Facebook group or doing focus groups if you have a product-based business or something like that, you can listen to your audience and ask them questions about your product or service and use the language, use their pain points and include that into your pitch per se, or, you know, the value of your product and be able to sell it more effectively. There's so much that can come from your target audience. And even if you look at Apple and the phone, why do you think we get so many different versions and updates for our phones? Because they are monitoring how we use the phone. They are monitoring how, you know, how we scroll, right? And even the movement of our fingers, right? When we touch the screen, they are monitoring all those things and they, you know, create updates based on those things. And so in addition to hiring someone to help you use the right language to sell it, you really also have to get to know your audience and their behaviors and the way they describe their pain and frustration, and also be able to flip that into your marketing spiel or the value that you sell.
Hey, Ms. Johnson. This is Chris. So, of course, I know you for a long time, right?
Yes. And,
trust me. I mean, we go back, right? So,
right.
The one thing that I've recognized with you and I'm most proud of is your fearlessness and your confidence. It comes across. Your energy is amazing. It's no wonder that you're great at what you do, because you can sense it from the first time you speak. You know, you open your mouth, you feel it, and people know it. And I recognized that in you a long time ago, right? So for me, you know, I'm stepping out there as a caterer and starting my own business. But the one thing that motivates me or pushes me is that I believe I can make anything. I'm not afraid to make anything. I'm not afraid to try anything, to do it, because I believe that I can master whatever is out there, whatever I set my mind on doing. But I do, when I get a job, I do kind of trick myself into thinking, oh man, this is going to be the worst job ever. I'm going to fail at it, because I do need to push myself when I'm in that moment, right? So when you speak, it just comes across as so confident and so fearless, and you know what you want. So my question to you is, what is your dream job other than what you have now? Like, what is your dream project that you want to put your hand on and put your stamp on and say, this is what I was here to do, this is what I was born to do, and what I've made to do?
Okay. I love that question. And thank you for the compliment. Especially when people know me and could say that, that really means the world to me. So thank you so much for that, Chris. So when it comes to a dream job, I don't believe in dream jobs. I believe in a dream mission, period, right? I feel like, you know, for me, very early in my career, I had this idea of a dream job, and I got several dream jobs, and it just wasn't a dream. It turned into a nightmare. And so through my experiences, though, I have developed a dream mission, right? And for me, my dream mission, which I'm on right now through my program, Stories That Sell and She Deserves More, they are my dream mission. And that mission is to help people step into the next best version of ourselves, especially women, especially people of color. I feel like in our culture, we are often taught that we could only tell one story, right? We can only tell one story. And I'm here to tell you those people lied. I'm here to tell you that you can live multiple lives in one lifetime. I'm here to tell you that despite fear, self-doubt, uncertainty, besides, you know, despite the words in your head that tells you that you're not good enough, that you can press reset and begin again. I'm here to tell you that no matter how many different versions you want to come up with about yourself, I'm going to help you communicate the value of that version and position yourself as a leader in your field. Because I do believe for most of us, many of us listening on this call right now, who we are right now, what we are doing in our careers and our businesses, it is because we've been programmed to do them. And so that programming either came from, again, your parents or your caretakers who told you that you needed to get this one specific job. My parents was big on a city or state job, right? Because it had good benefits and all those sorts of things. And you don't quit a job. You know, you stay with a job for 15 or 20 years, right? Or, you know, you need this amount of money to retire and all those sorts of things. And so my mission is to help people understand that you could live many different versions of yourself. You can push past your comfort zone. And so I feel like for me, while things, of course, are far from perfect, I am living in my dream mission right now. And I'm committed to helping as many women and men step into that next best version of themselves.
Excellent. I also want to tap into, of course, we've all been enduring COVID, but there's also been a movement in the country the last few years with all the police killings and all the injustice going on. But, you know, and you can look at that and be depressed or get discouraged by it. But I look at it another way. I see things changing. I see the pendulum swinging, right? And I see a movement happening and an awareness by our people, and they're going after things. I don't know. Am I wrong, or are you seeing the same thing?
No, you are definitely spot on. I mean, I noticed that a few years ago with Black Enterprise, and I think it starts with sharing our stories, just even this platform that we have right now. I always say one person's story heals 1,000 more other people, right? And so I've seen it even, like I said, with Black Enterprise, primarily being able to interview so many entrepreneurs of different ages, coming from different backgrounds. There is, people are stepping, especially Black people, our people. People are creating safe spaces for us to exist in, instead of trying to force feed ourselves to, you know, spaces that aren't designed for us. So I would totally agree with that.
Well, I want to turn it back over to the host, but, you know, in the future, we got great things that we're going to do together. This is not where it ends for us. We continue this journey, and I wish you nothing but the best, which I don't need to, because, you know, you're phenomenal. And you're going to do great things out there. You're making an impact. You're making an impact on a lot of lives and people who are finding their voices, and it's needed. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, Chris. And listen, I have to let everybody on this call know, Chris, okay? My sister and I, Lisa, we doing a drive-by, okay? Don't forget about us. We need a drive-by.
I got you.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes. Candia, I can tell that a lot of times, and I'm making an assumption, and you know what it is with assumptions, right? But yeah. I am going to assume that a lot of times when you're giving these on-site presentations, that you're the only person of African American descent in the room. How do you handle that?
You know, sometimes, I would say very early on, it was uncomfortable for me, right? And so one of the things that I've learned to do, and one of the things that I believe, is there's no greater conversation than the conversation that you have with yourself, okay? So a lot of the times I would have to, like, okay, Candia, you know, first of all, before I walk in the room, typically I speak to the event organizer or the HR director, and I kind of get a sense of who the target audience is. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, of course, it can be uncomfortable. Especially, I mean, you can't see me right now. I'm a tall Black woman. I have big natural hair. And in corporate America, I would never wear my hair like this, because at that time, it probably would have been considered unprofessional. And so now how I handle it, I mean, I'm confident in my content. I'm confident in my delivery. The lights could go out and I'm still going to be able to speak to what I know, right? And so if, you know, someone there has a preconceived notion about who I am, that's on them. That's not on me. All I need to do is show up as Candia and be fully prepared. And 99.9% of the time, I'm prepared. I'm prepared in my energy, and I'm prepared in my content, and I'm prepared in my delivery. And so going in with that confidence, it doesn't really stop the anxiety, right? I still have the anxiousness and you know, the nerves and all those sorts of things, but I give myself permission to show up as Candia. And that means with my hair the way I have it now, that means you may get a little Brooklyn girl on one hand, and sometimes I may form into Michelle Obama. I don't know. I may drop a Cardi B lyric on you. I don't know. But I give myself permission to show up as myself because I'm confident in my content. I'm confident in my experience. And if that makes someone else uncomfortable, that's on them. That's really not on me.
Okay.
Hey, Walter.
Yeah, and the reason I ask you that question is that, excuse me, as a senior project manager, you know, certified project PMP, I'm a program manager, you know, and I've been running projects since the late 90s. Okay. Mm-hmm. And some of them are more $7 million, $10 million projects over a 2-year period. And to chair a meeting, for instance, of 500 people globally, all right, and they know that when you're doing these meetings, they know you're a black person by your accent. I mean, you can't speak like a white man. So they know you're black. You know, some are in the conference room, and then the rest of them are on the conference call. All right. You know, I've been in meetings where we did roll call by email. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So you got like 500 people from Asia to Europe to LATAM and all these other places, and you're black. So you walk in, and this is something that I just want you to try to reinforce for our audience, is that one key thing that you mentioned is planning. Mm-hmm. All right. Planning is key. All right. And then effectiveness. How do you go about demonstrating to them that you are the guy, you are the smartest person in the room? Okay. How do you, and as you said, you stop by a conference room door, you met with HR, and you do this, but how do you convert? Because I know in your position, you have to try to convert and enhance people's ability to get their work done. So how do you go about, you know, that type of thing? Can you elaborate a little further? Maybe you answered it in the previous question.
Sure. Now I can give you some really specific things that I do. So first off, when it comes to delivering a presentation or a talk or what have you, preparation breeds confidence, okay? And so I never walk into a room without fully understanding the groups and subgroups of my target audience, whether they are managers with 20 years of experience or new social workers or moms or parents. So I always have a very good understanding of my audience. And I'm going to talk about this as if I was walking in the room. I get to know my audience, and I make sure that the content that I'm delivering, I may tell a story that's more related to, you know, working with the Navy, right? So if I know if I have military people, I am going to talk about my time. I'm going to tell a story of working with the Navy. If I know I have people with, you know, moms or dads with parents on the line, I'm going to talk about, you know, some of the challenges that they may be faced with, okay? And the third thing, which I believe is very important, is I walk in the room, so I may get to the conference. So if I'm doing a Zoom call nowadays, I always play music. I play music because I'm letting you know the energy is different in my virtual rooms. If I have to walk in a physical room, I'm speaking to everyone as if I know you. Hey, Chris, or, you know, I'm just going to say, hey, you got your coffee, right? So I'm setting that tone and I'm setting that energy. And most importantly, I'm asking questions first before I even engage in discussion. Like, how many parents do I have on the line? How many managers over 15 to 20 years of experience, right? And so I'm getting to know my audience, and I'm asking them questions in such a way to engage them and develop a bit of rapport with who Candia is and sort of how I'm going to go about delivering my presentation. And I don't take the stance that I am the smartest person in the room. I just take the stance that I belong here. I take the stance that I'm going to deliver something from you. And guess what? You may teach me a thing or two. I think for me, I also just try to take the pressure off myself of being the only Black person. I take that pressure off of myself. I'm a competent person in the room. Instead of focusing so much on me being the only Black person or me being the only woman, I focus on the reason, the primary reason why I'm being brought into that room right now is to deliver on whatever talk that this person hired me to deliver. But I would say that the preparation breeds confidence. Know your audience, engage them in conversation, and also, you know, be prepared to just be you, to really talk in your tone, tell jokes, and engage with people in that way. People have to see you as a human being, not a robot, right? And so I've just tried to focus on being the best Candia that I can be when I'm delivering a talk or a presentation.
Thank you. I do have another question. I want to circle back to your travel. Uh-huh. Yeah, you've been many places. You know, your global trekker, as I call it. Did you ever run into any type of racism on while you were out of the country on the road?
I would say I had this weird, you know, in Singapore, they weren't used to seeing Black people, so you.
I've been there.
Yeah, you've been to Singapore.
I thought I was going to be Kane. I swear to God, my friend said you're going to be Kane, Walter. You know,
there was a lot of staring, like very scary staring, right? They would just stare at you. Yeah. They would stare at you. I had a group of guys come up to my friends and they wanted to take pictures. That was fine. And so it was funny. When I was in Singapore, I met the cast of The Lion King. And of course, if anyone remembers The Lion King, it was an all Black cast. And so when you would see another Black person in Singapore, you would be like, hey, because you would be so excited.
Oh, definitely.
And we actually hung out for about 2 days. We went to a couple of clubs. We went out to eat and things of that sort. But yeah, Singapore was probably, the people weren't mean, but the staring was very, very uncomfortable. And I would say that was really the only place that I feel like I was very uncomfortable. I was very uncomfortable in Singapore. So thank you for reminding me of that. I love the place, but it made me uncomfortable. I wonder now if the staring thing has subsided because I see people on the gram going to Singapore and Thailand all of the time. So I'm wondering now if that has subsided some.
Yeah. But Singapore, I was there for 4 months doing implementation for a bank. So I've stayed in Singapore. I stayed at the Marriott on Orchard Street. I know you probably heard of Orchard Street.
Yeah,
that's one of like the main streets. And actually, back then they had the overhead toll. So you didn't have to stop and pay a toll. You had them overhead, just like they just incorporated in New York. They had them back then. This is like 98, 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. And one thing with Singapore, and I don't want to get off topic, but I do want to elaborate that, you know, some people may get the opportunity or will have to travel to Singapore, is that you just got to be careful because you don't see policemen policemen dressed in uniform. Everything is like undercover. They're plain clothes and, you know, you can't spit on the street and this and that, you know, and you can't, you know, litter. So you get this paranoid feeling in Singapore that you don't get anywhere else. I didn't find that, okay? Wow. But in Tokyo, when it comes to discrimination, they discriminate right out front. Not that you're Black. They say you will go to a door and we'll have a sign up there, all right, that said no gaijin. Gaijin being foreigner. They mean Black, white, doesn't matter. You're a gaijin, you're non-Japanese. Mm. Right? So I didn't feel any type of racism in, let's say, Tokyo, the way I felt in Singapore.
Right.
All right. Did you go to the Night Zoo while you were in Singapore? I did go to that.
No, I didn't go to the Night Zoo.
That was really cool. They had a little train that you would take. But, you know, with Singapore, I'm still off topic a little bit. You know, you were close to, like, KL. I'm not far from Kuala Lumpur. You could take a ferry over to Malaysia. I played golf in Malaysia.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you Singapore, had excursions. It surprised me. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the food. So the food was really good in Singapore. It was crazy hot, but I enjoyed the food. And I actually went from Singapore, I went to Thailand. And that was pretty cool, too. But I could only do 2 days of Thailand, and I was done. It was overwhelming for me.
Wasn't it hot? Was it hot enough in Singapore? It was 12 hot. Miles from the equator.
Yes, it was hot. The pollution, there was a stench a little bit. And so I would say Singapore was good. I mean, Thailand was good for me for about 2 days, and that was it. And that was it.
All right. Okay. Let me snap back on top. You know, I did have to go there because it just triggered some memories of mine. You have a podcast called Candid Conversations Podcast.
Yes.
And why did you start this podcast? Is it an extension of what you do?
The podcast is definitely an extension of what I do. So the podcast, it's about helping you speak up and show up for yourself despite fear, uncertainty, or self-doubt. It is my baby. I love having guests on the podcast. I love talking about mindset stuff and just how to, you know, position and pitch yourself and press reset on your life and career. And I've been able to connect with so many people through the podcast in itself. Even I found out recently there are two of my corporate clients who listen to my podcast, which was kind of weird because, you know, if anyone listens to the podcast, it's like, hey, party people, Candia's into a different zone. And they actually love the podcast. Like, you need to bring that energy into the workplace. So the podcast has been great. In addition to, you know, being a good marketing vehicle for me, it also is helpful in just establishing a deeper connection with people who follow me on social media.
Yeah, I was listening. I listened to one episode today when I was going through your paperwork, and it indicated that you had a podcast. I said, "What? Really? She does? She's a sister. You know what I mean?" And I went on to Podbeam, and I went on to Apple. I went to Apple Podcasts first because they got that high bar. So you know, you cross the Apple bar, you cross any bar, right?
Right.
So I saw Candid Conversations Podcast, and you have another one. You have two up there, actually.
Well, the first one was the first one that I started, and then I kind of lost my consistency, and then I restarted probably about a year ago.
Okay.
And usually I produce about 2 episodes per month.
Excellent. And you do all the work yourself.
I do all of the work myself. I am speaking into existence that next year this time, I am going to get someone to edit the podcast and do all the marketing and the scheduling. Because, I mean, I'm sure you all know it is a lot. But I would say that there are some really good systems. I love the script right now. There are some really good, amazing systems that you could use to record the podcast and edit it and send it out. So it has made it easier because I want to say 2 years ago, I would pay someone to transcribe it for me. Now I have an app where I can record in the app. And then as I am recording, it is transcribing and you could remove the filler words and all those sorts of cool things. So, you know, your systems for any entrepreneur out there, anyone who's looking to become a speaker or a consultant or anything like that, your systems are definitely key to your success. So equally important to your products and services is to making sure you get a handle on the systems that are going to set you up for success.
All right. And again, I just want to mention the name of that podcast, and it's across platforms, the Candid Conversations Podcast. Also,
yes. Thank you.
I understand that you are up for an award.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm so excited. So I think I'm more excited about this award than probably my degrees, honestly. So I'm receiving the Women of Resilience Award next Thursday. And this year it's myself and 2 other women, and we are being honored for our commitment to educating and uplifting women in the workplace and women within our communities. And so that award ceremony is next Thursday, I believe. And it is free. This year, the organization is actually doing the ceremony free online. So I welcome you all to join. I'm really, really excited about that because, as I said earlier, I'm more committed to a mission than a title or, you know, a job description. And so getting an award for a mission that I am committed to just feels so amazing. And it's proof that, you know, people see what you're doing and your story definitely matters and it's encouraging people. So I'm so incredibly thankful and excited about it.
Well, we're going to give you a good shout out right here.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Any more questions from the panel?
Yeah, I had one more question, and as we're wrapping up, you had mentioned about the fact that the toughest conversation is the conversation that you have with yourself. So mm-hmm. could you share with our audience, what are some of the things that Candia says to herself, whether it's each day, and then also some of the most successful people read books. So what is something that you are reading, putting into yourself, into your system? What are the things that you're consuming to keep yourself motivated and keep going?
Oh, I love those questions. Okay. So I talk to myself like, you know, I'm talking to my girlfriends, like, Candia, girl, we ain't got time for this, right? So I may second guess myself, like, what if these people don't like me? What if they don't like, you know, my ideas? Or what if no one buys my program? And I'm like, Candia, girl, we ain't got time for this. You know, it's not about getting, you don't need all people to like you. You need the right people to like you, okay? We're not trying to get everyone to like us. We're trying to get one person or two people or three people. And I feel like for entrepreneurs and even for, you know, if you're a change maker or someone leading a social cause, oftentimes we want the world to like us. There are, what, 75 billion people out in these streets, right? So you don't need the world to like you. You need the select people who is going to invest in your product or service to like you, right? And so I would say for me, that's some of the things that I tell myself. Oftentimes, if I get what if anxiety, so I get what if anxiety when I'm about to deliver a talk or workshop. What if I forget my lines, or what if I forget my content, or what if I fail, right? And so I learn how to talk to myself by saying, first of all, failure is feedback for your come up, okay? What you gonna learn from it, all right? That's the first thing. And then the second thing that I do is I do this brain dump thing where I write down all of my what ifs and I force myself to get present and focus on what to do now. If you think about all of your what ifs that you have about the things that you want to do and you just get present, I'll challenge you to change your what if into what to do now. What is it that you have the resources and the tools to do now? It's not about knowing the next best step. It's not about knowing the next right step. It's about knowing the next best step. Best is temporary and it's for right now. So just learning how to have those conversations with myself and teaching my clients how to talk themselves through some of the what if anxiety or the thoughts and the fears and the insecurities that they have about themselves is key to stepping into whatever goal or achieving whatever goal it is that you want to achieve. Now, when it comes to books, that is a really good question. Okay. So for mindset work, two of my favorite books are one is The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It really teaches you how to be present. The second one is Untethered Soul. And it talks about really how to handle your inner roommate, right? Your mindset work. Now, when it comes to business books, I would say Think and Grow Rich, both versions, the version by Dennis Kimbrough, and then the initial version that was developed years
ago. Napoleon
Hill. Yes, Napoleon Hill. Another book that I would say is a favorite of mine is How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's another thing that I want to talk about or just share with you. You know, just being intentional about developing my network. One of the things that I firmly believe is that relationships will take you places that money can't. Be intentional about expanding your network beyond your immediate circle. And so How to Win Friends and Influence People is just all about relationship building. And so one of the habits that I always encourage people to adopt is Follow Up Friday. And Follow Up Friday is a 30-minute to 1-hour slot of time where you are spending time following up with people, you know, you may have engaged with on LinkedIn or Twitter, maybe asking someone if you want to go to lunch, or just asking people what type of projects that they're working on, figuring out how you can add value to them, or how you could possibly virtually connect, you know, them with someone who they could partner with, or that, you know, maybe they should know one another. Because one of the things I want to be very transparent about is when you talk about, when people talk about, you know, you've talked on stages in Africa and you have all of these amazing opportunities that you have had to work with brands, a huge part of that was because of my relationships. Yes, I've done the work, but I've been blessed with people who have mentioned my name when I'm not in the room. Okay. And so I always like to encourage people to be intentional about the relationship building piece as well, because it is equally important to being able to sell yourself and communicate your value, as well as getting your mind right.
Can I jump in? I just want to say to Candia,
yes,
you are, you know, you're a wonderful person. You're awesome, right? And
thank you.
You are the narrative that needs to be out there. Like, this is who we are, and this is how we show up. And you represent everything that the Walt Weekly is about. And we are thankful that you came on the show, you know, and you just made us better. You added something great to the show, and the bar is high for the next guest. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris.
I hope everybody picked up those gems that she was dropping.
No, I definitely. I don't even want to quit. Actually, I still got some stuff I want to ask her. But in the interest of time, and as Chris said, and we're bumping up against the clock here. Candia, how do the listeners reach you? I know it's in the chat room, but yeah, I'd like for you to just walk through the various social media and your website and stuff like that.
So I love to play on Instagram and Twitter. I play on Facebook, but you probably get a little bit of the real Candia on Instagram and Twitter as well. And my handle is Candia Johnson on Twitter and Candy J on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, Candia Johnson. I keep telling myself I'm going to use Facebook a lot more. But you could definitely follow me on social media and engage with me there. Listen to the Candid Conversations podcast. So I am on Podbean. And I love that you all do this live. So I may have to try this live thing out, because I love this format. And that's how you can, you know, you can connect with me.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. I want to also just second what Chris said. You know, you've been a dynamite guest. And I think that the listeners learned something. And maybe down the road, you can come back and we can, you know, go through this and see what's new out there in the business world. So with that said, let me just thank the panel. I'm going to thank Chris big time. As Donald Trump would say, bigly, for bringing Candia Johnson onto the show today. All right. This show will be rebroadcast on Sunday after 3 on all the major podcast platform, i.e. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find the Walt Weekly Podcast. Okay. All right. Also, our website, www.thewaltweekly.com, the Walt Weekly. com. Please visit our website for more detailed information about Michelle, myself, the panel, past guests, and we had some tremendous guests on this show. All right. And then our social media handles, Instagram, The Walt Weekly, Facebook, The Walt Weekly Podcast, Twitter, at The Walt Weekly. All right. Now, email address, drop us a line. All right. There's something that you want us to try to, you know, get some more information on, or some critique, you know, as to how we can go about having a better show. You can email us at thewaltweekly@gmail.com. Also on our website, please sign up. Please follow, like, and share if you're new. And we appreciate your attendance, folks. Y'all have a great weekend. And again, fantastic show. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Yep. Happy Mother's Day.